Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
If political elites want to break the law willy-nilly, they will be held accountable for all the violence and blood and rioting.
This is really, really unprecedented. People on the streets are shouting against the Supreme Leader. It's actually illegal to do that. People are imprisoned for doing that.
Many of our government's hardworking, patriotic public servants have long been denied basic rights for one simple reason. The people that they love are of the same sex.
Albert hits good pitches hard and bad pitches even harder when he gets in the batter's box. If you pray, then you start praying. And if you don't pray, you think about starting.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
It's difficult to tell nowadays if you just peruse the media what being a man is supposed to mean. I mean, in some cases, it's the supermodel, the metrosexual. In other cases, it's the sensitive dad, the kindly grandfather. I have a sense that 100, 200 years ago, maybe we don't even have to go that far back, American men had a better idea of what they were supposed to be, who they were supposed to be, how they were supposed to think and act. And they were more comfortable with that. And as was society. What's been lost in the last several centuries or even decades when it comes to manhood? We're going to talk about chivalry here for the first half hour of Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon. It's the 29th of June. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can also email us with questions or comments right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. After a conversation on chivalry with Brad Miner, we'll be talking with Mark Pearson about the history and the reliability of the New Testament Gospels. Warren Cole Smith will join us in the second hour. There's an investigation into the Lakeland outpouring. Remember Todd Bentley from about a year ago? He was in the news claiming to heal people and reviving a revival in the Florida panhandle. Well, some people have looked into his claims of healing, and we'll see what that investigation has turned up. And then Dr. John Morris will join us, president of the Institution for Creation Research based in Dallas. We'll talk about a contemporary to Charles Darwin, who also had a theory of natural selection. Must have been in the air back then. That's the 2 hours of Issues, Etc. You can join us 1-877-623-6943 or talkback@issuesetc.org. Brad Miner is senior editor of The Catholic Thing, former literary editor of National Review, author of several books, including his latest titled The Complete Gentleman, The Modern Man's Guide to Chivalry. Brad, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
What's missing from the 21st definition, if you can even call it that, the 21st century definition of a man?
Well, I think it's in the book subtitle, which is to say chivalry. You know, chivalry was once the common aspiration of most men. They wanted to be fair. They wanted to be strong. They wanted to be capable of defending the things worth defending. They believed in the old knightly virtues, which were loyalty and generosity, courtesy, honor, but also prowess, that literally the physical ability to fight for what's right, because that's what chivalry first and foremost means. It's the worldview of fighting men. Once upon a time, when you referred to a chivalry, you were talking about a group of men on horseback that you might see coming over a hill. That was a chivalry. And this all started back in the early Middle Ages, and you were wondering in the setup when it might have begun to wane. And I don't know that anyone knows. The very first document that we have that talks about chivalry, which is from the 13th century, so already fairly well along, decries the end of chivalry. And you had books like Don Quixote by Cervantes that is very much a book about what chivalry once was and how it had fallen into disrepute, but was still the highest possible ideal. But I think when it really took the biggest hit in our time was right around the time of the First World War, because that was the time when faith was beginning to be challenged in a more aggressive way, when people were dispirited by the slaughter of the First World War, when so many things were roiling philosophically, militarily, politically. There were revolutions all over the world. And I think then people came to question whether the association of manhood with prowess, with this ability to be well-educated, focused, restrained, but also powerful, whether those things hadn't been put into disrepute, and perhaps completely so, by that terrible worldwide conflict.
You are quick to point out in your book that the ideal of chivalry was never really truly a reality. It was always an ideal. But if we can deal with the definition in terms of ideals, what was it?
Well, it was, as I suggested, it was this this notion that, you know, to be a complete gentleman, a chivalrous man, to inherit this tradition of knightly prowess and gentlemanly dignity, that you were, to some extent, a warrior, a lover, and a monk. Those are the three archetypes I use in the book. You know there are things worth fighting for, and you're willing and able to fight. You treasure the women in your life, especially your wife, if you are a husband, your mother, if you are a son. You try as best you can to give her what she wants. You are her servant, even though you are not by any means her doormat. You are, someone who's, as I say, suggested, dedicated to lifelong learning, and you have this restraint, what in the book I call sprezzatura, this ability to do it all without seeming to make too big a deal about it. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of thought, a lot of effort. You are inevitably aware, I think, of the degree to which you fail to achieve this high ideal. But failure is not a problem so long as the ideal remains constant. I'm sort of paraphrasing G.K. Chesterton here. You know, so long as that ideal remains fixed, it doesn't matter how often we fail, because all our failures help lead us towards the goal that we're seeking. If you keep changing your goal all the time, then your failures are pointless. They don't take you anywhere.
Then the
wrong road.
Well, then in contrast, Brad, how would you characterize the 21st century definition of a man?
You know, I'm not sure that you could say that we have a definition of a man. I think we're in a time of anti-definitions. People want, if you go back to that peculiar decade that I certainly lived through, I don't know your age, Todd, but the 60s, the 1960s, I mean, then the phrase that welled up from deep down in some forgotten recess of humanity was, do your own thing. And there's a certain alluring logic to that, that everybody should be free to define himself however he or she wishes to. The problem with that is, when people are turned loose in that way, when they're not bound by the restraints of tradition, of religion, then they'll become just about anything. And we certainly have seen that borne out in our time.
I was watching probably History Channel, something on Andrew Jackson.
Mm.
Famous, of course, not only for his political accomplishments, but also he engaged in several duels in the court, and over the honor of his wife, even I think
his
after
wife.
I think after she was dead, and it seems quite quaint, it seems anachronistic, but here was a man who was willing to die or kill for the honor of his woman. You talk about the warrior. You mentioned it a moment ago.
Yeah,
lead us there.
Well, I think that, as I say, if things are worth dying for, if they're and if things aren't worth dying for, then what's the point of living? I mean, as Christ said, you know, greater love hath no man than he should give up his life for his friends. And by friends, we can construe that not only to be the people closest to us and that we know, but sometimes people we don't know, but whose freedom we care about, or ideas that matter. You know, you have to be willing to draw the line. You have to be willing to fight. Without that, then we're just going to be steamrolled by whatever enthusiasm is sweeping the world. It could be Islam. It could just be some version of left-wing ideology, or for that matter, some version of right-wing ideology. You have to be willing to have a spine, to stand up and take a stand, and be willing not only to fight with words, not only to to draw a verbal line in the sand, but also to use your body, your sinews to do that fighting. Now, that said, I recognize, I use in the book the example of World War II, there were a great many warriors who fought World War II from behind a desk, breaking codes, doing other sorts of things. It isn't necessary to be in the gym every day, to box the way I do, even at my age. You don't have to do all that sort of stuff. Although, I do think that when we took the sword out of the man's hand, and there's a sword on the cover of my book for a good reason, when we took the sword out of the man's hand, he lost something. When he ceased to become a little bit dangerous, we lost something. If you think that you can just walk over somebody, if people believe that the opposition is spineless, then whatever you're defending, whatever you think matters, will be lost.
We're talking about chivalry. Brad Miner is our guest, senior editor of The Catholic Thing, former literary editor of National Review, author of several books, including the latest titled The Complete Gentleman, The Modern Man's Guide to Chivalry. Our call-in number on this Monday afternoon, June the 29th, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or email us right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. You say the term gentleman nowadays, and you'll either get kind of a Emily Post mind your manners image popping into your head, or you will think of someone who's kind of prissy and concerned about the cut of his jib, whether his hair is straight. The new term, of course, is metrosexual. How far the definition of manhood has come. We talked before about the warrior. When we come back, we'll talk about the lover and the monk as well as we discuss chivalry with Brad Miner. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
And so it goes, go round again, but now and then we wonder who the real men are. Whoa, 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 whoa.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back. Russ Bell, James Hearn Jr., Richford Goal, Michael Breitenfeld, David Shooks, Charles Follett, Matthew Boyer, Leslie Bassey, Michael Mumpower, and Gary Robinson. Thanks for your support.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The toilet seats are always up at LPR. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about chivalry. Brad Miner is our guest, senior editor of The Catholic Thing, former literary editor of National Review, author of the book The Complete Gentleman, The Modern Man's Guide to Chivalry. Matthew is listening in Palatine, Illinois. Matthew, thanks for waiting.
Yes, thank you. My question is for Brad. The church has become overwhelmingly feminine, dominated by the wives and mothers and grandmothers. How could your views on chivalry, as discussed in the book, affect the return of the father to the pew?
Great question. Thank you very
much.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's a, you know, sort of a perpetual question. You know, at the beginning of chivalry, there was an outpouring of interest in Mary, the mother of Christ. That's why all over Europe, I was just in Europe for the last 10 days, and you see churches, and it seems like more than half of them are Our Lady of something. But I think that men have to look at what the wellspring, the source of their manhood is, what it is that we're asked by Christ to do. And when you recognize that you, the source of courage, the source of honor, the source of justice, when you recognize what that source is, you realize that you belong in church. And if you're any place, I mean, there are plenty of other places that a gentleman ought to go. And I'm not going to get into all that. And there are plenty of places a gentleman ought not to go. But the first place he should be is with his family and then in church. Because it is there, from those two sources, I think, that he takes his strength.
Chivalry had at its very beginning a conscious understanding of its of man's relationship to the church, didn't it? I mean, wasn't it largely about men considering themselves, even as laymen, churchmen as well?
Yes, very much so. There was a very close relationship between the early knights and the religious authority. In the earliest days of chivalry, of course, we're talking exclusively about Roman Catholicism, but then as we move along in time and get particularly to the emergence out of the concepts of chivalry to the idea of the gentleman, there was always a sense, and therefore into the post-Luther period, you still have this rootedness in faith. That's why I talk about the monk. And it isn't just, I mean, the monk seems to make it, although there are Protestant religious orders, that might seem to make it rather more Catholic than I mean it to be. What I'm trying to get at here is a sense of rootedness in faith, of the necessity of knowing first principles. Because, again, everything that you would do in life, if you're just battered about by the media, for instance, which is very influential in our time and had no influence once upon a time, if you were just battered by that, you would never be in one place all the time. And you need to be in one place all the time. And I think those places are yourself, your manliness, your essential manhood, your family, and especially, you know, your children and your wife, and then the family that extends out from that, including the community. And then, of course, you've got to be rooted in some kind of sense of why the world matters, why things hold together. For instance, I think that the American Republic, which was founded by people who believed in God, depends not so much on a specific set of religious beliefs, but it depends upon people who recognize, as Mr. Jefferson said, that our rights are derived from nature's God, from nature and from nature's God. Because if you think they're just derived from the Congress of the United States, nothing will survive.
This email from Dan in Olympia, Washington. Didn't chivalry die to a large degree because of the onslaught of feminism?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I think that feminism has, you know, a pretty checkered history. But, you know, right at the start, as I suggested, you know, there was this outflowering of interest in Mary, the mother of Jesus. And chivalry, the beginning of chivalry, has something to do with the collision of knighthood, the emergence of knighthood, of the organization of various orders of knights, and this new appreciation of women through the appreciation of Mary. And there was something called courtly love, which happened about the same time as chivalry was really becoming organized and defined. And part of what men did is they respected women in a new way. Now, I'm not going to argue that that changed everything and that it stuck. But I do think that, again, this aspiration, however often we fail at it, has been constant for over 1,000 years. And at the center of it was respect for women. And my feeling is about certainly the best women I know, even if they now, sort of because of the overwhelming power of words in our time, refer to themselves as feminists, they still, the best women I know, appreciate strong men, men who certainly give them respect, who show them love, who respond to their specific needs, but at the same time, don't compromise on what matters. The man does not compromise on what matters to him.
This email from Ken in Orlando, Florida. Any suggestions for instilling this sense of manhood in our sons?
Yeah, the show it to your sons. I mean, it's interesting. As we were coming back from on the plane yesterday, coming back from Prague in the Czech Republic, my wife was talking to our younger son, our older son, who just graduated from West Point, was off on his own now, left us in the Czech Republic and went on to France. And she was asking him, what do you think made a difference in your life? Was it school? Was it, you know, church? Was it family? And John said, oh, first and foremost, it was family. And when we went up for the very first interview my older son, Bobby, had when he was thinking about going to West Point, we were talking to a man who happened to be I had a friendship with him through work, was a colonel at the academy and was the chairman of the history department. And the colonel asked my son, why was he coming here? And Bobby pointed to me and he said, because of my father. Now, I think he was wrong about that. I think this is a young man who always aspired to the military ideal. But my point is this. You want your sons to be chivalrous. Show them chivalry. Show chivalry to your wife. Show chivalry in your community. Be a just man. Be a loyal man, a generous man, a courteous man. That's the way you teach your children. Don't ever, ever think that, you know, the best education is going to come to sons from any source other than their father and their mother. Part of the crisis I think we have in some communities is that there are too few fathers at home.
You used a term before, I'm going to butcher it. It's sprezzatura?
Sprezzatura, yeah.
And I think you used the word restraint. Is that the use of the word? What is this conduct of life to which the chivalrous ideal pointed men?
Well, in the case of sprezzatura, and this is the way the book ends talking about this, I think restraint is the great lost ideal of our time, particularly for men. I mean, I know that, you know, some people say, well, you're just talking about the kind of characters that Gary Cooper played in the movies or John Wayne played in the movies or whatever it is, but that's not it. It's that there are levels of experience that we have with other people. I am not particularly restrained with my dearest friends and with my family. But as I move out from there, I become more restrained as I confront the world. Now, some people would say, well, why would you be different in one situation than you would be in another? Why not just be the same all the time? Because I think that's foolish. When we encounter people for the first time, strangers by definition, we ought not to let them know the deepest secrets of our heart. We, you know, part of that ritual that we do when we meet people where we extend the hand to shake it, that goes back to this time of chivalry. And that was when knights would show by offering an empty hand that they were not armed. There was no weapon there. And that would be the beginning of a friendship. You've got to build friendship in stages. We're too interested. Too many Americans are interested in a kind of instant intimacy. And I put this into the revised edition of the book, even though this is primarily a book sort of aimed at a male audience, although, as I've learned over the years, a lot of women have come to the book and appreciated it. I say that, you know, a young woman who wakes up in the morning next to a stranger may find that she went to bed the night before with an enemy. It's terribly important to remember why it's important to be chaste, to be restrained, to hold something back, until you get to know what the truth is about who it is you're meeting or the situation you're in. I love quoting G.K. Chesterton. Chesterton once said, don't tear down a fence until you know why it was built.
Brad Miner is senior editor of The Catholic Thing. He's former literary editor of National Review, author of several books, including his latest titled The Complete Gentleman, The Modern Man's Guide to Chivalry. You can purchase The Complete Gentleman under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Click On Demand. Brad, thank you very much.
It has been a pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Well, the ideal, of course, is set before us, and it's unmistakable. You say, where is the man, and I'm speaking here in human terms, where is the man to whom we all aspire. It's going to be father, it's going to be grandfather, it's going to be all of those things as intermediaries, but ultimately it goes back to Jesus Christ. I mean, Brad quoted him, "Greater love hath no man than that he lay down his life for his friends," which is precisely what Jesus Christ did. It's not only expression of his true manhood, his true humanity. It is part of what it is to be truly human, created in the image of God, what Jesus did for us. And he does it as both God and man, and thereby secures our salvation. I mean, talk about a warrior, a man who walks straight into the line of fire that is sin and its punishment, to take that punishment for us at the cross. Talk about a lover, one who loves with his whole heart and loves so that he would lay down his life for all of us. And monk, not so much a recluse, but the one who is determined to not just be holy, but be holy for us as our substitute. When we come back, we're going to talk about the historical reliability of the Gospels. Mark Pearson will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
What does Issues, Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues, Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from, 618-223-8384. What does Issues, Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384. On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Janice Hayden, Bill Bertels, Sarah Fields, Carl Fields, Ray and Barbara Bowman, Lori Woodard, Bill Kurtzman, David Sokolix, Bob Myers, and Lowell Nadler. Thanks for your support.
No giggling allowed. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Women need to be told about the risks of abortion. This was the shocking statement made by Barbara Kay, a pro-abortion columnist for the National Post. She says there are ample studies out there showing even early abortion causes future premature birth. This can cause all kinds of problems for babies, like autism or cerebral palsy. She says this information is readily available to abortionists and should be shared with women before they have an abortion. Ms. Kay says that if she were the mother of a premature baby with these serious problems, she'd be angry enough to sue the abortionist for keeping her in the dark. What it boils down to, Barbara Kay writes, does abortion on demand provide empowerment or bamboozlement of women? A pro-lifer couldn't have said it better.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.